looks like he enjoys himself more than France. And I think that's probably quite a bit. It's going to sound very old saying this, but he's a millennial. You know, I've heard of these millennials, Jordan. He's a millennial, and these millennials are mercurial beings, I understand.
None of the kind of It's Coming Home stuff was done serious. It was all ironic. It was all just kind of like, you know what the thing is? People are misunderstanding what the it was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be the trophy. It's the sense that, like, football's coming. We've got ownership over the national team again. We can relate to the team, the kind of hard working.
But again, critical moments in games. If you're an attacker, if you're playing up front, you need to put chances away. And he didn't do it. And England got lucky on quite a few occasions in games where he missed chances. And had they been up against quality opposition, they would have lost.
Welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the final in our World Cup special here. My name is Jordan, your host. This week on the pod, I'm joined by Greg, Josh and Tom. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Not bad, not bad. How are you?
I'm very good. Very, very well, thank you. Josh, enjoy the World Cup?
Yeah, it's been good. It's actually been really entertaining. Enjoyed the final as well. So yeah, now it's back to miserable club football.
It depends on who your club is. Which brings me to Tom.
How are you doing?
Are you good?
Yeah, time signed, yeah.
Enjoy the last month?
It's better than when it's not on. as a broadcast of a talk sport, I'd say it's better than assessing made-up transfer rumours.
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd agree with that as well. What I want to know, I'll start with the question, guys. I will start with you, Tom. Greatest World Cup / final for you?
Probably one of the best World Cup finals. Obviously, I'm only 35, so I don't go way back beyond. I mean, going beyond that would be... It'd be weird, wouldn't it?
If I could assess
the 1936 final, particularly, but it was an interesting and high scoring final, and enjoyable to watch. The World Cup itself, don't know. I think we've got a recency bias, perhaps, the way we go, oh, that was the best thing ever because it's all you can remember. But there was lots of drama and lots of subplots and lots of stories. Quality wise, I don't think it was that high, and that's, I think, problem that we have, because the Champions League is so high and they all play together week in, week out, and these guys don't. And so a lot of things you see being very effective, for instance, set pieces, the things you can drill into a side
in a short space of time.
And that was what they came to rely on. I saw The Guardian referring it to the Tony Pulis World Cup, which it got a point, but better goals than you'd have seen at
Just
West Brom
and
Middlesbrough.
Indeed. Greg, was it the best World Cup you can remember?
I think I said this like 4 years ago, like the Brazil one. So I'm kind of with Tom. I think recency bias is a terrible thing that inflicts all this. But in my head, it's like I compare it to I've had more fun, the most fun at this with this World Cup as the 1998 World Cup. But then that's the first one I can remember. And as a kid, again, that's like the opposite of recency bias. You kind of have all this like lovely childhood, like fun and warmth for your first proper World Cup. So I don't know. I don't think I can rank it. I just say I've had a lot of fun, but I would agree that the quality has been lacking. And as much as it was fun seeing the big teams drop out early, I think we were really denied those really kind of, you know, pivotal kind of semi-final games. I mean, France-Belgium had a bit of it, but we didn't quite have that like Germany versus Italy type game that really upped the quality levels at the right point.
Josh, you were saying the last time you were on that you thought it was the most dramatic World Cup final, but it wasn't in terms of quality. You agree with the boys here that it wasn't the best quality. Do you still, a week or so, stand by that the quality
of the tournament itself? I think it was quite, I find it a quite fun tournament, maybe because it was the summer as well. I mean, we had a great summer in England and the feel good factor was there because England were doing well. Some of the games really good. VAR was really interesting, seeing how that played out. And there were some dramatic moments, but the quality, again, I agree with the guys, the quality wasn't that high.
So what do we mean? When we say the quality wasn't that high, what do we mean?
I mean, all right.
No one can defend.
Apart from France, who won it?
Well, yes, that is so true. Yeah. Well, I've always said this about the Champions League. The quarterfinals of the European competitions, the two European competitions, there was something like, across the eight games, there was something like 64 goals or
in the Champions League.
And Europa League.
It was shocking.
Just gone. No one can defend anymore. Football has become entertainment. Now, that's fine if you like football as entertainment. And I do. I'd much rather watch that than two well-drilled... unless you're a purist, and I know you are a bit, actually. But I'd much rather watch loads of goals and some comical stuff happening, Hugo Lloris messing it up at the back, than two well-drilled sides playing out a boring 0-0 that goes to the penalties. Or like Euro 2016 final, for instance, when it went to extra time. But in terms of the quality of it, I just think the football has become entertainment, and so the emphasis on scoring rather than defending. And I just sort of wonder why teams don't try and do both. Because if they did, they win it.
Well, I was going to say, are we saying then that you can't have a high quality tournament with lots of goals?
No, I don't think that's true.
Are we saying? Because there were lots of goals, lots of good goals.
I just think that the quality levels in terms of when you think about the attackers in this World Cup, right? Mm. You think about previous World Cups, you have multitudes of different attackers on different teams. You have like Ronaldo, Thomas Muller, I think, who was like top scorer. You had Klose, who was scoring lots of goals. Then you had on other teams. You had Ronaldinho on Brazil. You had
who was scoring lots of goals.
No, just in terms of quality players in different teams. I feel like in the attackers in this World Cup, even you look at France, they won the World Cup with a striker who didn't even hit the target.
We'll get to Drew in a bit.
So that to me is like, and then you think of England got to the semi finals. I think they're a decent side, but they're not like a top quality side. Mm. I think even Croatia, even
good side, not top four.
They are now, but in terms of when you think about teams of previous like eras, when you went like 98 World Cup or maybe 2002, I feel like there was more quality sides there.
Well, that's like saying though that Liverpool are the second best side in Europe, and they're not.
I
found that the final in so many ways encapsulated the whole tournament in that good goals. There was an own goal. This World Cup apparently has the most own goals of any World Cup. Goalkeeping howlers.
Why do you think that is with the own goals? What's the reasoning behind that?
I don't know. Maybe it's more shooting, so therefore you're getting more deflections, and I don't know.
Maybe.
But it just seemed to kind of encapsulate the VAR controversy. Everything has kind of been a theme throughout the tournament. Even Croatia.
One problem with VAR was there was no red cards for violent conduct. Everyone who doesn't want to see a Zidane headbutt every
now
and again.
Or a De Jong
exactly.
Inter. Yeah. What was the most? Do you think first of all that the rightful winners won the World Cup? And I know that you'll say the team that wins it is the best team, but do we feel that France were the best team in this tournament, Greg?
Yeah, but they're kind of the opposite of what the tournament was about. So we say it's the most fun tournament and almost like the least fun good team won it. And I don't mean that in any disrespect to them.
Yeah.
Because as you're saying, they defended well. They did their job. They were a proper team. And you could tell Deschamps, for all the criticism he's had as a tactician, he instilled a proper winning mentality in that team. And they all worked for each other, all played for each other.
And they were the best side at the Euros. Mm. And they didn't win it then.
Yeah.
So it isn't always the best side that wins it. But this year, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But were they most fun side? I don't know. Nah. And that's the thing. What you were saying earlier, Tom, about like not having the kind of preparation of a club side to play the kind of way. I think the only side that showed glimpses of that were actually Belgium when they did those counter-attacking goals. Because it was almost like all the pieces fell into place at the right moment. I was thinking, oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind watching them win the World Cup. Good, but it just didn't quite. But then France just said, no, that's not happening.
So
we're going
to
stop you.
So to be fair to Deschamps, I said before the World Cup started, I wasn't having Deschamps. I had France as my team to bomb. So I look like
I backed
you. You did. So they've completely mugged me off. I'm still not completely sure about Deschamps, but I'll give him his props. He's a World Cup winner now.
He nailed his tactics in the Belgian game. I'll give him that. Always been critical of him. But his use of Matuidi and all the rest of it absolutely shut down Belgium.
He did. Do we think that we're seeing a nation that's going to dominate for the next couple of major tournaments?
It's difficult to know.
I know it's
difficult to know who will come again, but you'll certainly see them getting to the latter stages, as Germany did for many years, I think. Because they're so young.
Are we saying they're the favourites for the Euros probably now?
Yeah. Well, on paper, they've got squads, haven't they? So it should make... They should do it, but on paper, it's football. On paper, it doesn't really count for much on the pitch.
Well, you still have Belgium. Who's got a lot of talent as well. But I feel like even the France team now, winning the World Cup, getting to the Euro final, I still don't think they've peaked. I think they're far from their peak.
Yeah, I agree.
It's really scary.
What France should... I mean, it won't, but what they possibly could do, and this seems ridiculous to say, given that they've just won the World Cup, is get a different manager.
I was done my next question.
But then they don't need to, do they? Because but you think if there was a stronger other sides, a stronger Germany, a stronger Argentina, a stronger Brazil, that Deschamps might not have found his way through that. Mm. Perhaps, did he get all he could have out of his side? Don't know.
Well, that's the question, Tom, because for me, with that level of talent he has at his disposal, he will argue, I won the World Cup.
Yeah, we'll
shut your face. But
it's the Mourinho argument, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. And if Mourinho did that, he'd be getting criticised for that, to be fair to Mourinho.
But then he goes, I won a treble. It might not have been a real treble, but he's got the trophies to prove it.
Yeah. Do we feel that he's not, despite being a World Cup winner now, got the best out of the tools at his disposal?
I think it goes back to what you were saying before. Fun-wise, no. but they're an effective unit, and that's all you can ask for ultimately. So it depends whether you're a pragmatist or an idealist, and I think the pragmatist will go with Deschamps every time, whereas the idealist probably wants to see Arsene Wenger get hold of this squad and see what he do with it, because that would be beautiful.
Pragmatists
might not win anything.
Don't want trophies, right?
So yeah.
And to be fair to Deschamps as well, going into the World Cup, there was a lot of pressure on him. Sorry. And when you think that Zidane and Wenger both were jobless, there was a lot of pressure on him to win.
And there's a lot of rumours that Zidane literally just wants the France job and then he wants to retire after that. He's done it all with Real Madrid, then he wants to do it all with France, and then go, I'm done now. I'll headbutt the opposition manager.
Giroud, he was mentioned earlier on, first striker to win a World Cup, play pretty much every game and not hit the target, well, didn't get a shot on target.
No.
Does that Does that then mean that he's a poor striker?
Well, it depends what you're judging him on, because he's a tool in the system, isn't he? He's not necessarily there to score the goals. He's a hold-up play merchant. So, like, what was that? The great Brazil side that never won it, they had, was it Silvinho up front? And he got pelters from the Brazilian press for not scoring anything. But maybe he was a bit of a player ahead of his time, because they had all these great attacking midfielders, a bit like France. It's Giroud's job to basically be the awkward bloke up front who can make the ball stick and let the other ones do the fancy stuff. So,
like a French Steve Fletcher.
Exactly that.
Josh, what do you reckon? The stats are not good. You can't go through 7 games and not have a shot on target. And it's not like he's not got supply line behind him.
He can demonstrably.
But he's won a World Cup. So what, would you change that system now because of the fact he's not
shot on
target?
It's not even that he never had a shot on target. I can think of some moments in games where he should have scored and he just didn't hit the target. He missed. There's like clear cut chances. It's so bad. One of the reasons I say they haven't peaked. I think Mbappe is 19 years old, first World Cup, was very good, but not all throughout the World Cup. Then you have Giroud, who probably they should replace.
Why?
Because he's not good enough.
But they won the World Cup.
Yeah.
He's 31 as well, so they are going to replace him.
Yeah, true.
A World Cup lacking in quality, I would say. And you can't have a striker that misses clear-cut chances if you're going to play Germany on top form, Argentina on top form, Brazil on top form. That could cost you. So,
2 words, Stefan Guivas.
Yeah. And
at least he got a shot off.
He's Francis Emil Heskey. He allows the better players to play better.
I think it's a raw deal, but even when I saw that stat, I was like, whoa, that's pretty bad.
Did you ever watch him and think he had a good game? Because I did.
I never watched him and thought he was shocking. I mean, no shots, but maybe lean towards that. But
he peaked at 7 out of 10, didn't he?
And to be fair, the first game they played against Australia, I thought France was shocking.
That was a game
he didn't play in. He started every game after that first game, so you could say that he didn't get any goals, but when he came in, the team got better. Another player, Tom Pogba, gets a lot of heat from a lot of people. I thought he's had a very good World Cup. I thought he had a very good World Cup final. What does Jose now need to learn about what he's done for France to implement that into this United team?
I don't know. I don't know why Jose Mourinho can't get a tune out of Paul Pogba. It's embarrassing, frankly. The bloke's clearly got a huge talent, but sometimes he plays Man United. Greg will be better positioned to answer this than I. Well, both of you, in fact, you're both, and Josh, are both United fans. But some games he looks like actually rubbish. Like, he does nothing. He offers nothing. You know, like, you'd actually be better if you weren't playing. Some games he's sublime, but when he plays for France, something happens. Maybe his defensive roles are unshackled. Jose Mourinho's overly defensive tactics shackle him and hold him back. But for France, he does it on every game.
He turns up. Josh, what did you see for France in terms of Pogba that you don't see? What are they doing with him there that they're not doing at United?
I think in the French team and also similar at Juventus, he had a very defined role. Like, in United, he seems to be in the midfield and is given freedom. And I think the freedom confuses him as well as the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's true. Yeah. He popped up at left back yesterday.
Yeah, he had a very defined, like, specific role in terms of his defensive responsibility, which I think in this World Cup is one of the things that he basically shot down every single pundit that said he can't defend, he can't be disciplined, because that was his role, next to Kante in the midfield, and then just get the ball forward quickly. And I think in United kind of setup, he has defensive responsibilities, but he's also the main creative force of the team, the main attacking creative force, which is a bit
it
of
probably
a
helps having Kylian Mbappe in front of you rather than Romelu Lukaku. And I think Romelu Lukaku had a decent World Cup, particularly what was the game we were just talking about off mic where he bossed it? He played sort of on the flanks.
Brazil.
He was fantastic in that game, but he has got at times a poor first touch, and it helps when you got Mbappe.
So are you saying that Pogba like someone that can stretch rather than come to the ball? Hold the ball up. Is that what you think?
Yeah, perhaps.
Greg, what are you seeing? Why has Pogba been so good for France that can't quite get that at United?
Because I think the interesting thing is Deschamps has, as we've all said, played quite a defensive system and in some ways quite rigid. So there are comparisons there with Mourinho. But I think what's different is, and Tom said it there with Mbappe and the Lukaku question as well, is that it just feels like there's more movement in front of him for France.
He also looks like he enjoys himself more for France. And I think that's probably quite a bit. God, it's going to sound very old saying this, but he's a millennial. You know, I've heard of these millennials, Jordan. He's a millennial, and these millennials are mercurial beings, I understand. There's probably something to that. He plays because he gets paid a huge amount of money, but he sort of seems like the sort of guy that when he's enjoying it, he really plays and lifts his game. And when he's not, he doesn't. Mm. And I think the Man United doesn't look like he enjoys himself.
I agree with that. And I think that goes beyond tactics as well. So we said earlier, like, Deschamps done really well to kind of bring his team spirit into the team, like a real sense of unity, everyone working for each other, pushing. And the team actually came afterwards, after the final, and said when the chips were down, we all just naturally just saw Pogba as the leader of this group. And we know that Mourinho doesn't really like to have leaders that can potentially oppose his own kind of status in the dressing room and in a club. And we say he's a millennial, and I agree with that, but he's a bit like Kevin De Bruyne in that at an early age he went, well, this
isn't
working.
I think he might be a millennial as well.
Absolutely.
I think they are all millennials, 100%. Young players.
And I think their mentality doesn't match with the old school thinking of Jose Mourinho. Jose Mourinho is a kind of like, we're in the trenches, lads, and I'm your commander, and you'll do what I say and all the rest of it. We're going over now and all blah, blah, blah. Horrendous war. Analogies, we'll move on. But De Bruyne and Pogba, they're two guys that at an early age went, this isn't working
for
me.
Shut up, geez, I'm dabbing.
exactly that. And then when they put the phones down, they went, I'm not getting minutes here, so I'm going to go and actually push myself at another club that are giving me the opportunities. Pogba went to Juventus, and fair play to him, that was a bit of a call, wasn't it? De Bruyne was like, I'm kind of fed up with all these kind of mind games at Chelsea, I'm going to go to Wolfsburg and actually play some football. Mm-hmm. They both went to where they wanted to go, they worked their arses off. And it paid off. And I think there's an element of Pogba looking at Mourinho going, you don't have to do this confrontational management. We could just get on with the job. Mm. This is, you're putting obstacles in the way that might have made Cambiaso or
being
excited,
managed by Jose Mourinho seems tiring, attritional. Mm. Yeah. And I don't know that we've all worked for bosses like that. It works for a bit.
Yeah.
And then you're like, this is really tedious.
It's why he works better with guys who are coming to it towards the end of their careers, where they're just like, you know what, whatever you say, because we're going to win. I'm 31. That Inter Milan team was just full of players that this was their last hurrah, really. And they were willing to just kind of, we'll slog it out like kind of militarised unit and just get on with it, because they knew that if they did it, they commit, they win trophies, and they wanted to win some trophies because Inter especially had underachieved in that period. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think these younger lads are like, I don't see the point in this. We can just work harder together as a team and just, we can have a bit of fun and laugh around with Jesse Lingard on the training ground, but I also want to work and I want to be a self-improver. Pogba went to Man United because he wants to win the Ballon d'Or, not to do this big Nike kind of, advertising. Thing. He is a self-driven guy who wants to improve, and I think I personally think that he looks at Mourinho's antics and just thinks this is inefficient to where I want to be.
So, because of his performances, Joss, at the World Cup, do you feel that he's almost put the pressure back on Jose now, because people can't criticise him and say, oh, Pogba's not trying, because like, well, hang on, we saw what Pogba can do during the summer. Maybe Mourinho's the problem.
I would like to think so, but I suspect no.
As with all of these sort of polemic things, it probably fuels both camps, doesn't it? You're sort of saying, well, it's Jose's fault if you don't like Jose.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, Pogba can do it for France. Why doesn't he do it for Man United if you don't like Pogba? So, as with all football arguments, I guess.
Josh, should Varane have won the Golden Boot? Not the Golden Boot. What's the one, the Golden Player?
How many set-piece goals?
what's the one they give for the best
Golden
player?
Ball.
Golden Ball. That's the one. Golden Ball.
The Jasper Carrot one.
Yeah, that one.
David Beckham.
Just one. Or, Trey's question, should he feel hard done by that he didn't win the Golden Ball?
I thought he had a great tournament. I thought he was probably the best defender at tournament, and France had the best defence, so they could make a case for that. But there's also Kante, there was Pogba.
Does Kante's final let him down?
He had a stomach bug. Come on.
I don't know.
Oh, he's a lovely little man.
He scored a goal in the World Cup final as well. So yeah, I can feel. but there's so many players in that team that he could have won it. So
do we think Mbappe, guys, was the correct winner of the Golden Ball?
I reckon young player of the tournament worked for me.
Yeah.
For
sorry, Modric won the Golden Ball, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Sorry,
yeah.
Got that wrong. He won the young
player. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So you've written that one. Okay.
And yes, that is correct.
So you think Modric was the correct winner?
I would have went for Hazard, but he didn't get to the final. So okay. Modric's my second choice. So yeah.
Josh. Tom?
Probably Paul Pogba because they won, ultimately. France. Yeah.
I found it tough because I was like, Modric didn't feel right, but I couldn't think of a standout player to just put in as like, oh, it's that guy.
But this, this was the sort of tournament where we were all expecting the big names to come to the fore, and actually those sides that based themselves around one superstar all fell short.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is, but it's interesting, you know, that your Messi, your Ronaldo. Neymar, they all
England.
They were all expected to be. Oh, this is going to be the tournament of these superstars, and none of them got to the semis.
So I was so disappointed by Spain because I felt like they had the superstars, the but in abundance. They worked as a unit.
Tip, yeah.
And then Lopetegu did that, and then I had this go down for the Golden Ball because I was being a trying to be a clever dick about it. But I honestly thought he was going to smash it, and he looked like he was going to do it, and then it petered out, didn't it?
So the World Cup as a whole was a success. No trouble, no dramas. A lot of the scaremongering that many of my colleagues were a part of engendering into the wider public didn't actually come to fruition, and being out there was fantastic. But do we think it was such a good World Cup because the bar was set so low? It's not thinking about last. I'm thinking maybe we just think it was a great World Cup because
no one died.
Gay people were going to be beaten to death. Black people were going to be arrested. We just thought it was going to be such a catastrophe that anything that's not a disaster is a success. Is that an element, the bar being so low pre-World Cup, as to why we now think it was such a good World Cup? Or was it just a good World Cup?
I think it's an element. I don't know if you could put a percentage into like the arguments behind people thinking, but I think it's in the background, yeah. Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think early on, I definitely was thinking, oh, well, when's this going to turn?
Yeah.
When's something going to happen?
Yeah.
And it didn't. So maybe, maybe that relief, even a small part, played its part.
Josh, at what point did you, at any point, were you thinking something bad's got to happen here? This is going too well.
I actually didn't. Yeah, I was just watching the World Cup, I guess.
That's what happens when you hold a World Cup in a semi quasi-totalitarian regime country, isn't it?
Everything goes to plan.
Yeah.
There's no problem.
Even the football hooligans are under the state control. If you cause any bother, you won't be seen again. Don't do it. Okay, we won't. And
I feel like a pussycat.
This is not... Well, I wanted to make this point.
Did you see how they tackled them off the pitch?
Yes.
I wanted to make this point. I don't know if you were going to ask... I mean, you may still ask at some point about a moment of the World Cup. And if I can just...
I was, but you can...
Well,
jump,
if I can just go ahead.
Go on.
It's actually, for me, it was... forget all the stuff that happened on the pitch, which was clearly fun. The Pussy Riot protest yesterday, for me, was wonderful. Because, actually, we've been... It was a PR campaign for Vladimir Putin, this World Cup, and it's worked. Everyone is going, what a wonderful place it is, fantastic. And you're thinking, but there are political prisoners. Mm. Human rights in Russia are curtailed. And this was a timely reminder that even under a regime like that, there are people willing to say, ah, hang on, mate. No, 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 no. This is not the PR dream that you want it to be. And Putin must have been watching that thinking,
so close,
so close.
So close.
They will never be seen again.
It's true. It's true. It's true.
Well, having said that, I completely agree with everything Tom said there. But my big hope, and this might be a very naive hope, is that it's some stuff that Elliot Rothwell's been writing about, I think, for Eurosport and some other people, and that he's over there. He's actually living in Russia now. He's been there for, I think, about a year. And the whole kind of reaction when Russia did win in the knockouts and that kind of outpouring of like celebration on the streets, and the police actually didn't get stuck into them, they let it happen. And I kind of hope maybe that openness might continue on, or there might be an expectation on the streets that actually, you know, maybe we do want the shackles to drop a little bit more. And it might not create anything big in now, but like real progress rarely happens in big leaps. Maybe it'll just start a small trickle of...
I'm not so sure that will happen from a kind of government level, but I
think... No, ground up rather than top down.
Yeah, totally. I think the people on the ground that had their...
Can I just say, I haven't been to Russia, so I'm 100% speaking as an armchair pundit.
I would like to think that hopefully the people that live and are from Russia have seen all these different coloured people, cultured people, different religions come to their country and
realise... They're not all perverts.
That, yeah, they're not all bad. What's the hype about?
I mean, just some. I'm pointing at Jordan now. Yeah. By the way.
I was watching his Facebook Lives, never again. Oh, God, no.
That's okay. Josh, what was the... Let's be negative now. What was the worst thing about this World Cup? What was one thing that you thought didn't like that? That didn't work. He let me down. Was there one thing? I just want one from each of you. Thing that you just thought.
Neymar.
Really? Yeah. He was the biggest negative for you.
Yeah.
The World Cup.
He was shocking. Shockingly bad. Not just his performances, but his mentality. He's even become a meme on social media now.
It's a bad day when you become a meme, isn't it?
I don't understand like that performance at all.
Mm. Do you think he'll learn from how he's... Because he's been mocked quite heavily, even in Brazil.
Doesn't seem like the sort of bloke that learns, does he?
maybe I'm being too hopeful.
I think his period of learning ended when he went to PSG in four.
Possibly.
This is it.
Yeah.
Dig in now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe that holiday he had this season just...
It's a shame because I thought the whole point of going to PSG was, one, the whole Ballon d'Or pursuit thing, but also I thought, go to PSG... Have a year off, you know, going to the World Cup fresh and really, really kill it. Now, the injury, obviously, in the Champions League.
There's no discipline to him now, though. He is just...
I do what I want.
He's kind of what happened to Ozil at Arsenal, as in, like, when Ozil was at Real Madrid.
Ronaldinho as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a bit unfair on Ozil because he's at least kind of functional still. But, like, at Real Madrid, he had, like, a very specific role, whereas he was the guy who just had to get the ball very quickly to Ronaldo to score. Whereas Arsenal, it's been like, oh, you're a great guy. You just do whatever you want, float about. And he's kind of... become a very excessive player, I think. And Neymar, the same thing's happened. At Barcelona, okay, he was the lesser of the three to some extent, because he's a younger guy, he was the guy doing the assists rather than the scoring. But it made him so much better. He's gone to PSG now, and he's just like, oh, well, I'm the king of the world, so I have to stop trying now. You're I'm not saying he's not good, but he's just... It's like his game's got fat.
Yeah.
And they need to trim that fat off, and that's what having a bit more of an environment where people are going to question you, scrutinise you, is going to happen. I don't think he's getting that PSG whatsoever.
Tom, what was the one negative of the World Cup for you?
That FIFA haven't changed. Seeing Gianni Infantino sat on sofas at the top of the stadium, reading about the fact that some of these, you know, some of the FIFA delegates who are nobodies, faceless nobodies, have a great article in the New York Times about it, going from one game being taken by private jet to another game, and you just think that you were meant to have learned. And then he turns up, Gianni Infantino, in a volunteer. A hoodie looking like a weird ET figure, and you're just like, it's nonsense, isn't it? It's all PR nonsense, and nothing's changed, and it's very sad. You know, we were told Gianni Infantino would be a fresh new brush, and it isn't, is it?
Nothing. It's arguably worse.
So I'm sorry that I'm being negative about this.
No, the question is why worse. I really wanted to be negative.
I have enjoyed the World Cup, and there's been lots to celebrate and lots to enjoy, but. I just feel
it's all
that
front window
too many. Yeah, it's a lot of it's PR, and I think that it's skin deep. And when you do sort of dig away, and you don't have to dig far, you see it's still there, and it's all driven by money. And but then that is the world we live in. We ain't going back to kicking coffee cups around on terraces anymore. And that's for me, that's sad. But it is. You just got to roll with it, right?
Greg, what was the one blot for you?
This is going to be controversial because I did think it worked better than I thought it would, but VAR.
Okay.
Not a fan of it at all.
You're not a fan of it?
No. It goes back to what we were talking about in terms of football's become entertainment now and it's become corporate. And I hate this idea that it's a game played by humans. It needs to be judged on levels of like human error. You start bringing digital kind of, you know, margins of error into it, and it just becomes... comes almost like a soap opera, like reality TV, and we're taking away the authority of the referees. And I don't, as much as we want to help them, I don't think... putting a television screen on there is helping the referee, because we've already seen people going, oh, well, the problem was the referee was the one still left to make the decision. I'm thinking, I want the referee to make the decision because that's what they're on the field for. Maybe we need more referees on the field. This is a bit of a kind of an illogical...
But a bad referee uses VAR badly.
Absolutely.
And a good referee uses VAR well. And yesterday, he looked like he was using it well and then made the wrong decision.
That's the worrying thing for me. We've got VAR... He referred to VAR. He looked at it twice. Didn't he kind of come away and then go back?
Why are you looking?
And still got it wrong.
I think we should actually just ban slow motion to some extent, because it changes the whole context of what you're looking at. The intention in slow-mo looked far worse than it was in reality. Like, it looked like he'd done this like unnatural movement. Actually, that was kind of the kind of inertia of his arm falling when he's actually running. So I don't know.
Handball is a weird rule anyway.
Yeah.
It is. It is a convoluted
rule. But this is another thing. Most of the laws of the game are weird. They're so written to open to open to interpretation? Why don't we clean them up? Mm. Make them a bit more specific. If you've got a problem with there being so many grey areas, get rid of the grey areas. Don't put a TV camera on it and make it part of the bloody advertising. Like, I went into the hands on the cards on the table. I went into the tournament expecting VR to be terrible. It's actually on TalkSport 2, I think, before it, saying, oh, it's going to be the worst thing in the tournament.
I did that actually.
I was pleasantly surprised by what happened. Yeah, I was, but I still thought that, you know, it took away from the excitement of a goal being scored. I still thought that it didn't actually tackle the truly subjective grey area moments of the matches.
But then that, in the Germany-South Korea game, it added to it.
Yeah.
Actually. You know, and the came to the right conclusion while adding to excitement. So
it did, but it added to it in a way that goes into this kind of corporate entertainment kind of way, as in, like, you know, and oh we're gonna be back after this commercial break. Have you won the £1 million? It's a little bit Chris Tarrant, and I'm not keen on that.
I wasn't a fan of it.
What's wrong with Chris Tarrant?
Yeah. I love him, but I don't want to watch him play football.
I wasn't a fan of VAR at all. I thought actually generally Josh is looking, standing up now. Because he's looking, I have to admit, I thought.
I know it's here to stay. I've lost the war. I'm losing the battle. It's here to stay. So, and it's kind of functional in the way it is now. But I still kind of go, but it's not really what I'm going to football to watch.
Same.
It's just a bit cold.
But I agree with you. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Josh, who was the bigger letdown for you, Germany or Argentina?
For me, Germany, just because Argentina, I knew they were having a terrible time in their qualifiers. Yeah.
And everyone really could see them crap.
Yeah. Wasn't expecting too much. Germany, they were really, really bad. Mm. Even after that, you know, scraping that victory against Sweden, you kind of had that expectation that, you know, they'll kick on, they'll get to the.
Never write them off.
Yeah.
It's the Germans.
They were just poor. Even that game against Korea, I don't have a clue what Lowe was thinking, to be honest.
It was a mad one.
I knew that Argentina were going to be rubbish, but I also knew Germany were going to be not that great either, because I presented TalkSport 2's live commentary of their game against Saudi Arabia. And I know it's a friendly, and I know it's just Sandy maybe and all that, you know, but they were not cohesive at all as a unit. And that was their first team there. And the previous game, they'd lost to Austria, and that wasn't their first team. There was five changes, and people were saying, well, you can't read into friendlies. And I think actually before a major international tournament, you can a bit, because that is the side that's going to play. And yes, well, they're not playing at their fullest. They almost drew that game against Saudi Arabia. They won it 2-1, but they almost drew. They hit the post thing in the last minute. Mm. Saudi Arabia, and you're like, Saudi Arabia are rubbish. Mm. Like, that shouldn't be happening to a side that's just about to take on the world. And I thought, I don't think they're going to do really well, and they didn't.
What I noticed as well was that Lowe pretty much picked a B team for the Confederations Cup a year earlier, and they walked it. And then he went back to the squad that he kind of had. I didn't understand what was the whole point, I thought, of playing the B team in that competition, to see who's ready, who's up for it, who can I bring into my squad for next year's World Cup. He didn't really bring anybody in. I didn't understand what the whole point of playing that B team.
I think it was a mistake. I know it's easy to take hindsight, but to leave Sane behind. And I know Sane's never done anything in a Germany shirt, but he's only 22 and it only takes one time for him to do something. But Love seems to like... He seems to have his favourites and thinks, oh, he doesn't give enough defensively or whatever. But at a time when you're crying out for a bit of creativity, he's the sort of bloke, he's going into the tournament on fantastic form. We know he can score goals and make assists.
See, I didn't think creativity was their issue. I thought the fact they looked so open in midfield, they looked very, very lightweight. Generally, that was, teams were getting through them way too easily.
It reminded
I thought
me
that was the bigger issue than creativity, although I accept that taking Sane even as a squad member.
Yeah, and he offers an outlet, doesn't he? If you're struggling a bit.
It reminded me of Spain 4 years ago. Exactly the same dynamic. You've got this team of, like, you know, proven winners, big names, but there's just a bit of lethargy because of age or whatever it is. Sami Khedira couldn't. He used to kind of do an almost Kante-esque role for Germany. He would just cover double the ground of everyone. He's had so many injuries now, he can't do it.
He
was just terrible. Yeah. And the same way as Del Bosque, he just looked like a guy who was picking his favourites when he could have brought in Koke and could have brought in this new blood, especially from the Atletico side, which had really started to be a new force in Spanish football. And the German side, same thing, just felt it stayed. They did bring in Timo Werner, but it just, as Tom said, it just wasn't a coherent force. Yeah. It just didn't work.
Whenever I've seen him play for RB Leipzig, I know there's a lot of talk around this Werner guy. I think he looks all right.
How long's Love's contract for?
He's just signed a new.
Just signed a really new long one. That was a mistake in retrospect, wasn't it?
Well, I think But I think the German FA are probably thinking, you won us a World Cup. Mm. We'll put this down to a freak. We had Rafael Honig.
Well, I mean, if Gareth
learn from this, and then we'll forget.
I mean, if they're talking about Gareth Southgate being given a contract through to 2022, then I mean, I like Southgate, but let's not get carried away.
Boom. And on that note, let's move on to England. We'll save Southgate. It's the back end of this chat, but I'll stick with you, Tom.
Yeah.
Was the semi-final finishing an achievement or an opportunity missed?
Both. Mm. I mean, it can be both. They're not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. It was an achievement. It was an achievement that no one expected us to get. But equally, when you look back in the cold light of day, we had a lovely run, a very nice run that we'll probably never get again. It all fell nicely. But, you know, Croatia are a better side than England. And I think England's lack of experience, lack of quality led us to fall short. I'm glad we didn't end up getting in the final. I mean, it would have been a great day yesterday. It would have been brilliant. I was thinking this, what a different day I would have had yesterday if England had been in the final. What a different day we all would have had. I probably wouldn't have been here, I'm going to be honest. You know, we would have all been absolutely buzzing. It would have been amazing. But I think France would. Having watched that game yesterday, I didn't think it before the game, but having watched that game yesterday, I was thinking, we would have got turned over here. Because the thing is, England are not that great a side. And I think that what Southgate has said is right. You know, we aren't the top 10 side yet. Mm. But there's a lot of positives from it as well.
I was going to ask you guys who are the players that you kind of that you liked. But I think we probably all agree on the same three or four, so I won't ask that question. I'll ask instead, Josh, what for you is the thing that in the next 4 years Southgate needs to do to ensure that England get to another semi-final, maybe not even get to a final, but make sure they get into the latter parts of the Qatar World Cup?
He needs to...
Just give me one thing. What's the one main thing that he needs to
improve? He needs to pray that those young players in that team kick on and their managers play them.
And I think, actually, that may come down to lobbying and man management. Away from the pitch, actually, if he can get round those boards, you can get round the managers saying, listen, these guys can do it. Look at Harry Maguire. You wouldn't have signed him from Hull, but Leicester signed him. He has been one of the standout sides of the tournament. Similarly with Kieran Trippier, signed him from Burnley, has kicked on at Tottenham. You can sign these lads from these sides and give them a chance, and they can step up and they will prove that they can do a job.
While I hear you, if I'm Sarri at Chelsea,
Sarri's an interesting case study actually.
Emery at Arsenal, first year,
he might give them a chance. Yeah. I think
possibly, but if I'm those guys,
Barkley and Ruben Loftus-Cheek under Sarri.
Well, I'm going to get to those in a minute. But my point is going to be, if I'm Sarri or Unai Emery, I'm not thinking about the future of English football. I'm thinking about keeping my job in my first year at my new club.
But that's what lobbying's about, isn't it? Lobbying is about saying...
It's yourself getting, I'm Emery.
No,
I'm
but,
not,
no, but lobbying is about...
Cheers,
saying,
Gareth.
No, but lobbying
you,
is about going out over a long period of time and saying, look, what we've got to offer is of real value to you. And this is, you need to see it this way.
Yeah, but sorry, Gareth, I've got a guy that I know plays in Verona
it's just a case of discussion and talk and over time trying to change opinions, because there's no reason why they couldn't.
So, Josh, do you see this as a one summer fling, or do you see optimism that there's enough there to believe that England are on the way to being a top five nation again in world football?
I wouldn't go that for you to slow it down a little bit there.
Top eight.
Slow it down a little bit. I mean,
a certified quarter final team.
I didn't think England were particularly great at the World Cup.
Agreed.
I think they were
functional.
Southgate got them well drilled in set pieces and good, semi good defensively.
So basically, a Pulis team.
Well,
if Pulis did what Southgate did, he would get hit.
That's a bit harsh. They're a bit,
just score the goals from set pieces.
But they created loads of chances, couldn't finish, and that was the issue.
They were a bit more entertaining.
That, question, but I'll come to you.
They didn't create that many chances. They didn't. Kane, for example, did they?
He was the odd one out.
A peripheral figure, despite the fact he won the gold
medal. I think he was very much half-fit.
Sorry, go on, John. Just finish your point, sorry.
What was my point?
I was just asking. Have you seen enough to believe that this England team could be a certified quarterfinal champion, not yet. World Cup?
No. They need more quality. And we go back to what we said earlier. This World Cup was lacking in quality, and maybe in 4 years' time, Germany will be back, Brazil will be back,
Italy, Holland
were at the World Cup. So you know, England need to kick on and make sure that they can make some of the younger players progress.
Greg, here's my thing. I don't put responsibility anymore on managers to play these young players. I think we're past that now. I put the responsibility now on the players. If I'm Barkley and if I'm Loftus-Cheek, I'm leaving Chelsea this summer. If I'm Rashford, if I'm Shaw, I'm leaving United this summer. If I'm even holding at my club, Arsenal, Chambers, I'm leaving Arsenal this summer. at what point do these players now have to take responsibility if they really want to be in this England team that seems to be on a bit of a positive crest? Because they need to be getting now 35, 40, 45 games. Starts, I'm going to start a season now if they really want to improve. Rashford, I don't see that happening. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, I don't see that happening. Do they need to now start being brutal and take a step down to get those games?
But they are doing. We've got lads going to the Bundesliga looking for games. Yeah. So that's happening.
We've got two, three.
Not there's more on the way. There's
but
more
from
on the way.
For the youngsters from the current England squad.
You say current England squad, but these are guys that have won trophies at youth level for England, so they're coming hot off the press.
Okay.
And they're going to get games in the Bundesliga. Okay. But it's going to happen. Guys like Jadon Sancho are going to be big this year.
Well, you look at Croatia, right, and Belgium. The reason why their players are so good is because they all left home.
Yeah.
They all left and they went to play for big sides elsewhere and learned experiences and learned
different
things.
I don't think you even
got
to leave
things.
Home. I just think if you're a top six club, go to West Ham and play every game, start every game of the season. Go to Everton.
Super
go
Jack has
Leicester.
Done that, though.
If I was Phil Foden, that is
get
true.
Out of City.
I'd be going to Bournemouth. I'll say that because I'm a Bournemouth fan. No, but they're the sort of side that play similar football to Man City, just with poorer personnel. And I'd be going somewhere like that. You start every game, you'd smash it. He would smash it in Bournemouth.
Am I being crazy, though? Even Rashford, I'll be seriously thinking about my future at Man United. Why am I staying?
I agree. But and there's lots of buts there. But what you're saying has already happened. Most of our squad is made up of players that have already done that. Harry Maguire came up through the Football League, and that's as good as going to the Bundesliga because it's a competitive league and you come up that way. Kieran Trippier left Man City to go to Burnley and then came through to Spurs. Mm-hmm. He did the same thing. John Stones came through at Barnsley, and fair enough, it worked out for him at Everton. But that's he kind of went on a bit of a journey
but
himself.
He's not going to be fifth choice at City.
Yeah, but
I don't think he will be next season.
Yeah, I don't think. I think he's developed. He's a young lad. I think Pep likes him. He plays the way he wants to do it.
He's 24 for a defender. It's
young, but that mistake, and I think it was a mistake to let Mandzukic in. He went to sleep for a second.
He'll learn from that.
How is he going to learn if he's on the bench for Manchester City this season?
I don't think he's going to be on the bench.
No. Why?
I think he'll play.
You don't spend. Yeah. Well, how much was Laporte?
It doesn't matter. I
company's not going anywhere anytime
soon. They've got a lot of games to play, I think.
But when Stones...
Company's injured all the time, for starters. But I think he'll play more.
When Stones was good, he was like
playing more
main guy.
And they're starting. I want these players starting next season.
But I think, honestly, I think he will at City. And the same with Lingard. Lingard will play enough games at Man United. Rashford's a different case, because whatever. Mm. But I think the vast majority of that team for England, they are actually guys that have done exactly what you said. And I think there's more coming up that way. They are people, a bit like we talked about earlier with Kevin De Bruyne and Paul Pogba. They either dropped the level or they were just persistent and they took their chance. We talked earlier about what you're going to do if you're Chambers or you're Holding. Look at Ainsley Maitland-Niles at Arsenal. As soon as he got his chance, he nailed it. He made himself undroppable. He made sure that Monreal had to really work hard to take his place back, and he's been rewarded with a much nicer shirt number, if that's such a thing, this season. No, but he's said to be in Emery's thinking for the midfield place and the rest of it, and I think he's a very talented player. He could fill that niche that we are actually lacking in, that kind of like deeper controlling player alongside Henderson, which I don't think Dyer showed he could quite do in the same way. So I don't know, I think the future is bright. I mean, maybe I'm being an optimist because it is a good summer, but I think what you're saying there, the players need to put it themselves to go and do it.
I think the future would have been bright regardless of how we'd done this summer.
Because
we've won up pretty much everything at unders level, and that's what Germany did. You know, they went at the end of the 90s
and Spain as well.
You know what, we aren't very good here, we need to do something, and they created a system which Southgate has seemed to have done. And that is what I will say about Gareth Southgate. I've been very impressed by the fact that he does want all of his sides to play the same and come through, and there's a real sort of fluidity between bringing the players through. I don't think tactactically he's very good. I think
his substitutions have been
worse. We'll get Southgate in a minute.
I think that England could go on, could kick on. It's whether they get the players get a chance.
In 4 years
I just
time,
maybe think perhaps not under Gareth Southgate. I know I'm jumping forward, but it's sort of connected.
So you think in 4 years' time there'll be enough seasoned players to have learned and to improve? Because that's my thing now.
Another one, Lewis Cook, we said him before, he's gone to Bournemouth, he came up through Leeds, he's getting minutes now. I'm positive.
All right.
And also on the system, this was my big bugbear during the World Cup. Every time the system proved its worth, people were going, yeah, but now we should change and add another midfielder there and do this there.
That was me.
Well,
for the Croatia game.
I wasn't digging you out.
No, but the Croatia game, I would have changed it, but go on.
But for me, like, we said earlier that England are a sum of their parts, but bigger than the sum of their parts this summer. And in the past, we had all these great world-class players in the world-class 11. They weren't a team. They were just individuals playing for themselves. It wasn't quite working. We've finally got a system. Let's just concentrate on having a system for a bit, and then we can do the rest later. But we haven't had one for so long.
We are lacking a creative midfielder.
Absolutely.
And that's just why, actually, I said at my radio show, everyone says, "Oh, you're biased," and you're absolutely right. I am, but that's why I thought Lewis Cook would have been just take him. You know, he's won the under 20s World Cup. He's been the first World Cup winner for England since 1966. Take him, because even the experience would be good for him. And you never know; you might think we're lacking a bit here in the midfield, a bit of creativity. Mm. Stick him on, and it might and he might do a job. He might not, but it won't do him any harm.
We don't tend to produce
a lot of those kind of players. Historically, anyway, yet. Josh.
Yeah. We are now.
But the thing is, youth sides in England until about 8 years ago, or even less, were still playing with full size balls on full size pitches.
Yeah.
And now they're not. They're taking their lead from countries like Brazil and Germany, and then they're scaling it down. They're making it smaller and making players more tactically smart and quicker. And we are starting to develop those players, and Lewis Cook is a prime example of
And you've got like, you got Will Hughes, you've got Nathaniel Chalabar, and more guys that went to a club that's going to play them.
Chalabar getting injured was a real shame, because I saw him at Bournemouth last season and I was thinking, how do we not get him for £5 million? What a bargain that is. And then he got injured, and obviously he didn't come back till spring, and by that point you're not getting into the England squad. But he fantastic, and he'll come again.
Yeah. I think we've got more talent than it sometimes seems on the surface.
I hope so. Josh, Harry Kane, do you feel that his great job, I thought he did a great job as captain, compromised his role as the centre forward for the team? I think in trying to do a very good team job, he was coming deep. I thought in the Colombia game, I thought he was brilliant. Didn't score, but I thought he was brilliant in that game. He did a very good team job.
Why, you compromised the captaincy?
Well, I'm just thinking, you don't see Harry Kane for Tottenham on the halfway line. So I think in trying to be a team player and do a role for the team, he compromised what he's really good at, being in the box, banging goals.
I just think the system didn't work for him. I just think the way England set up to play didn't suit his game. Not very Tottenham-esque. We didn't really have players who are going to get on the ball and pick a pass and wait for Harry Kane to make a run like you have at Eriksen. So I just think that was the main problem.
Do you think that he will be remembered as the driest Golden Boot winner?
To me, he will. Because I'm still shocked. I don't think he had a great World Cup. Mm. And I think I said it to you before. I just think it's really strange, but he won the Golden Boot. So what can you say about that?
Can't take it away from me. From him even. Greg Walker. I think his position might be under threat in that right of a three at the back. Do you agree?
Depends who's going to threaten him. I thought his role, a lot of people thought it was a bit unorthodox. I thought it made total sense. He was the kind of recovery pace guy. Proved it time and time again. He had some brain fart moments, but I think, you're saying the system didn't really suit Kane. I don't think the system suited anyone. I think the idea was the player suited the system. And the best everyone was like 7 out of 10, but that's why it kind of worked. Mm. So we'll see where we are in 2 years with the Euros coming in. But I quite like him there. He also allows Trippier to go further forward, because then he can kind of come out on the right,
but he's not
fill that gap.
But we saw on several occasions, he's not a central defender. And I think if Gomez would have been fit, I think he would have been in that spot. I think there's other possible defenders that may be coming through that maybe are centre-backs that are better in that role than him. And Trippier has
will we play five at the back going forward? The reason we played five at the back with three centre-backs was because none of them were that great.
Yeah.
Well, when John Stones clearly has development to do, Gary Cahill, not.
Yeah,
these centre-backs will improve. And at that point, you think, do they need a three? Harry Maguire, you could probably say, well, he doesn't necessarily need a three now. He's of a level. And eventually you go, well, we don't need three at the back. Say if John Terry and Rio Ferdinand, I know, if they'd been playing, you wouldn't have played three at the back.
Mm.
You'd have played two at the back. Two centre-backs, because they were good enough.
Got two good centre-backs.
Yeah.
Josh, did Sterling have a good World Cup? He's the other guy that caused a lot of discussion and debate throughout the World Cup.
God.
Did he have a good World Cup?
In my opinion, no. I think he's average. I think he suited the system well because he could stretch the play. He made some good runs. He was lively. But again, critical moments in games. If you're an attacker, if you're playing up front, you need to put chances away. And he didn't do it. And England got lucky on quite a few occasions in games where he missed chances, and had they been up against quality opposition, they would have lost.
Would you have dropped him during the World Cup?
Wanted to drop him. I wanted Rashford to play out front, but the Belgian game, unfortunately, he didn't play very well. So I think that would have been the chance, one of Vardy and or Rashford to replace him, and I think Vardy might have got injured or something like that.
So
then maybe he just was in by default, but maybe by the Croatia game maybe he should have changed it up again.
Greg, did he have a good World Cup?
I think I was guilty of this as well. I think I might have over exaggerated how good he was because of how ridiculous the reaction was to how
people
trying to write him off. Exactly. And I must admit, I don't think he was brilliant, but I thought he played the role he was meant to play in the team really well. That's a separate thing, yeah.
Well, that's the question. The question is, do you think he did enough to keep his place in the team?
Yeah, because I don't think anybody else could do what he did. Because I don't think Rashford can make runs, but he can't quite do the link-up play that Sterling does. Neither
and
can Vardy.
And he doesn't scare defenders in the same way as Sterling does.
Mm. Sterling was yeah. People were stepping off and thinking about him, sticking two people on him. And that also made it more difficult for him to score and do things. The amount of times he made a run, which, to be honest, it was a blind alley run, but if he hadn't made it, the other guy on the other side of the pitch wouldn't have come inside to kind of make a bit of space
elsewhere.
I
also think the fact that he scored 20 goals last season for Man City in one of the highest... Was they the highest scoring ever in the Premier League? I think they were up there.
Yeah.
Sort of hid the fact, really, that he's actually not a very good finisher. And a lot of his goals are tap-ins on the line. Mm. And that is true. You know, you often see him on the line tapping the ball in. And that's fine if you're playing like Man City. But if you're playing like England, it's not.
Yeah.
Probably not, because I don't think that anyone else, as Greg said, I don't think anyone else performs the role that he performed. And he did stretch defence. And he does scare defenders. I just wish he could score. Because if he was more clinical, he'd be unbelievable. He'd be up there with the best in the world. If he was just more clinical, but he just snatches, doesn't he? Rushes at his finishes.
I just think he's got no bottle. Three or four chances too many. At some point, I just don't think it's acceptable. I get the whole he works hard, he makes good runs.
But he couldn't even score the tap-ins.
Yeah, at some point you think to yourself...
But he got. Who was the goalkeeper that got a hand to his when he tried to turn it around him? Was it the Sweden game? Yeah, Graham was well, yeah.
I don't remember that.
Everyone went, oh, Sterling's done it again. That was a brilliant kind of intervention by the goalkeeper. And what annoyed me throughout this whole World Cup was...
Yeah, but he should have probably shot, right?
Yeah. I mean...
You know, a better finisher wouldn't have taken it around the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I agree with that. But for me, like, Sterling, okay, he fluffed chances, but he had 6 and 7 out of 10 performances that were being rated as, like, 2s and 1s and stuff. And that just did my head in.
It must be tough for him, mustn't it? Because he's got pressure that other players don't necessarily have. And there's a lot of... He's probably quite a delicate flower. I mean, I don't know him. I don't know what he's like. He says he's not, but... It must play on your mind that everyone's rating you harder than they are the rest of the side, and really putting you under the microscope in a way that other players in the England side don't get.
See, this is the thing, Tom. This is the thing that annoyed me during the whole World Cup and the whole debate around Sterling. It seemed to be you couldn't criticise Raheem Sterling's performances without being kind of branded in this with sections of
going gammon.
I've always said
that about you, Jordan. You are well gammon.
And with the media that clearly have a racist agenda against this player, it seems to be either you're racist and you hate him, or you love him and he's the best player in the world. I thought, no, it's somewhere in between. Mm. You can identify the fact there's a clear campaign in some parts of the media against him because he's black and rich and young, but also say he's not performing very well and he should be dropped. And it seemed to be a lot of kind of conflating the two that seemed to annoy me. I didn't think his performances were very good.
But I don't know who could play that role in the system.
Because I don't think he's a 10. I don't think he's a 10. I know what you're saying.
I don't think that set of players you could change the system.
Don't put him in the 10 role.
But I don't think we played with a 10. I think the whole idea was just playing on the counter constantly. Yeah. It was just run. And I think that set of players, I think if you would have changed the system in mid-tournament, it would have just gone,
I'd be more likely to drop Dele Alli. Because I don't think he was fit,
and
he wasn't doing it. He wasn't really at it, and I think that didn't help. Kane didn't seem fit either.
No.
I mean, this is why it sort of adds to. When I'm thinking about it, adds to the how remarkable it was that we did get to that semi final. I suppose I know we had an easy draw, but Ali, Kane not fit. Sterling can't score.
If we agree that Harry Kane wasn't 100% fit, Tom, does that kind of almost go against what we were lauding Southgate for doing, which was playing players that were fit and doing the job for him? He's kind of gone against that by playing a Harry Kane, our superstar striker, even though he's not really fit.
But he won the Golden Boot. And he showed remarkable cool to take some of those penalties. The goal against Tunisia changed our World Cup.
He did, but
if you go into that and you go in and you've drawn one all against Tunisia, like,
what about against Croatia?
Flat, innit? And then he scores that goal, it lifts the nation. It's 90th minute.
I get that, but by the Croatia game, it was quite clear he wasn't having a great World Cup.
Who would you have replaced Kane with then?
A fit player.
The squad.
But who? Who's Rashford? Vardy.
Who isn't in the squad? So if you're saying Kane shouldn't have been involved because he wasn't fit.
No. I'm saying once you're there, it was clear to us that...
Here we go.
It was clear to us...
He'd have done a job.
It was clear to us a couple of games in, he wasn't quite right.
But the same thing with Sterling, though. Vardy can't play the centre-forward role the way that Kane does. Neither can Rashford, neither can Welbeck. Who are you going to put in?
But would Southgate compromise anyone else, any other position?
I think he compromised everyone across the whole pitch.
You think?
Yeah, 100%. That's what I said earlier. I think the best anyone could do in that team is 7 out of 10. And that was both the weakness and the strength. I don't think it was a team for individuals.
I think maybe bar Young, everyone pretty much played in their position.
But they played it in a different way, though. Like the Walker position kind of tucked in on the right. But Dele Alli was dropping deep to help Henderson. He wasn't given the free role he does for Spurs. Sterling was playing those kind of runs to kind of stretch the defence, but... We just said he was kind of compromised by how he usually likes to play. Kane was forced to come backwards. I feel like everyone was asked to... No one was played like radically out of position, but they were all asked to do a little bit extra to make the system work, which meant that they couldn't play to their absolute 10 out of 10 peak. But I think that was both a strength and a weakness, because you look at that, as we said before, this wasn't the greatest, most talented group of players, so you had to do that. It's the same thing as what Sweden did. It's the same as what Bournemouth do, actually, in the Premier League. It's just these players that come together, work for each other, play in an organised way. I will get better and hopefully our stars will shine in the future. But I think for the job lot of players that he had, I thought Southgate did a great job, yeah.
Speaking of Southgate, Josh, I saw he did an interview after the Belgium third place playoff game, and one line I picked up on was where he spoke about the fact that he doesn't feel managers can have that much influence during the game. You've done your prep work, you've done your training. Once a team go out, there's not really much you can do. I vehemently disagree with that. And I also think that was notably, if there's one flaw I think you can label at Southgate, it's his in-game management. Was that something that you picked up on during a lot of the games?
I don't really feel like he knew how to change the team's approach during the game.
And I'm not blasting him, because it's his first time as an England manager at that level.
I don't think I really saw England go into a game and come up against it at some point and then change the way they needed to play in that game, adapt to the opposition and come out with a positive outcome. So maybe, but I think there's an ounce of truth in what he's saying in that, though. I do think you can make substitutions and you can change tactics a little bit, but at the end of the day, if your team's not at it today, sometimes it's just the way it is.
Against Croatia, we were getting overwhelmed in the middle. And he didn't rectify it. Yeah.
And at half time, wasn't there a double sub?
And against Colombia, we weren't getting overwhelmed in the middle. And he brought on Eric Dier at 1-0 up. And I thought, if we concede a goal here, we are in trouble, because there's no creativity. There's two examples in two big matches where he clearly got substitutions or lack of wrong. That sort of echoes what Josh said about game management.
But Greg, what's the single biggest thing that he did do well that you think that surprised you, that impressed you, that you didn't maybe think was going to come from Gareth Southgate?
I think going back to the system again. I mean, I'll hold my hands up. I liked Louis van Gaal at Man United, so maybe I'm just a weirdo.
Wow!
But I know.
We found him. we found the guy. That's amazing. I mean,
I was paying for the other plane.
70,000 people who were like bored, rigid, and we finally.
Oh no!
Found
it got
man.
Bad. It got bad. But when it was good, I was like, oh, this is oh well. But no, Southgate. He took the ego out of the England team, and I think we were better off for it. And I think that is the single greatest thing he did. And I think he gives us a foundation, whether it's him that builds on it or whoever. I think this more kind of logical, joined-up thinking way of doing the England national team is a much better
Man's
way of doing it.
Man's a PR genius as well.
You mentioned the word earlier on, millennials, and you were referring to... who was my earlier one?
Pogba?
Pogba.
And Kevin De Bruyne?
Do you feel that Gareth Southgate, in some ways, is the ideal manager for the millennial player? Because a lot of things I liked about him, the big decisions of dropping big players, you know, your Harts, your Wiltshires, your Rooneys. I like the fact that he was, from the get-go, very clear that he wasn't doing it the FA way or the media way or the fans way. He was doing it his way. I like the fact that he was young enough that he knew what Love Island was and the players were watching that, but not too old that he was too far removed from the players and they couldn't go to him.
Yeah, I think that's something.
Is he the ideal manager for that group of young players?
I think there's something in that. His man management's clearly very good, and so is his management of the media. I mean, the fact that universally the English media were in favour of him, regardless of how he did actually, and remain so to this day, speaks volumes for it. I don't know what he's done or how he's
bagged them up over the team sheet.
yeah, so listen, guys, I'm giving a team sheet.
He told Twitter to calm down.
Give me a break.
But yeah, I mean, even just that sort of NFL style,
I love that
media day that he did. I'm sure it wasn't his idea. Well, it may have been. Actually, that's not true because he's been to America and seen that, and that probably will have been among his thinking. But there's the PR team there, and it won't just be Gareth Southgate. The PR team there have done a brilliant job. I've been asking journalists. They're like, no, he's just really likeable. I don't believe it. I don't believe that. That's it.
I cannot be that.
Because like, you know, we all know what the English media is like. And actually, not only did that, he dampened.
Hodgson's a likeable bloke, actually.
Yeah,
and that didn't work out
exactly. But he dampened down the sort of public expectation, which helped. Also played up on the nice guy thing, and the entire media were on his side, regardless of how they did. And that was a remarkable thing to do. And actually, you know, people are still talking. You know, Terry Butcher said, give him a 6-year contract. Mate, calm down.
Does anybody, I'll come to you, Josh, does anybody, start with you, Josh, think that the whole It's Coming Home hashtag banter song, whatever you want to call it, in some ways backfired on England in that it was supposed to be the support that kind of really got to our boys and won games. But actually, as the Croatians have kind of subsequently said, they used it as motivation to basically... to beat England. Do you think it was banter, or do you think people genuinely believed it's coming home?
I think there was probably some who genuinely believed it. I think in the most people who I spoke to, it's kind of just it's a bit of fun and games, wasn't it? I don't think
anything... saying that now because you got knocked out.
No, seriously, I think I was on the podcast like before the Colombia game, and nobody on the panel thought England had a chance.
Yeah,
and even just England fans who I spoke to at work or just in the pub when you're watching the game. Everyone thought, we might get semi-finals and we play someone decent and we get knocked out. And then I think that's just how it, most fans kind of...
I don't know anybody that was English that thought that they would lose to Croatia.
Really?
Yeah.
Total opposite
really?
Experience from me. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Greg, do you think there was something in that maybe we got a little bit out of our pram? Or do you think, as Ian Wright was saying on TV, well, why wouldn't we get out of our pram? Why wouldn't we get excited? We've not got this far before. We're used to seeing crap England teams. Let's get excited.
I think the mainstream definitely got hold of it and made it into a kind of like, it's all yeah type thing. But that wasn't how I recognised it when it kind of was coming on early on in the tournament. I had no expectations for England. None of my mates did. We kind of liked the idea of what it could be under Southgate, but we were just like, we're probably going to go out in the 16 quarters. Play well. We just want to play well, maybe go out early, just give a good account of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it went further than we thought. None of the kind of It's Coming Home stuff was done serious. It was all ironic. It was all just kind of like... You know what the thing is? People are misunderstanding what the it was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be the trophy. It's the sense that like football's come home. We got ownership over the national team again. We can relate to the team, the kind of hard-working, egoless kind of
I'm
way of playing.
About, Greg. That's what I heard.
Get a better mates, mate.
That's what I heard when we lost to Croatia. But nobody was saying that it was the idea of...
Yeah, but no one cared about what the it was before the situation. It becomes a story like, what do they really mean about that? People are talking in pubs like, oh, it's amazing this team. I didn't think we'd be playing like this all tournament. I think that... It depends who you speak to. It depends what when you came on board the bandwagon. Because you get to a certain point, it becomes a bit...
There's
of a
load of pseudo bollocks talked about this, isn't there, frankly? It's a catchy tune. And a lot of millennials weren't around in 1996. So actually, they're hearing this tune probably... Yeah. Not necessarily for the first time, but the first time in context of what it was just a nice hot summer where we're all out on the piss and people were just singing it. I admit that it's not my style, but the morning after we beat Sweden, I got in the car and I drove my mate home. And
you
I
didn't
was,
go to IKEA, did you?
I didn't go to IKEA. I put all the beds back. I was like, you know, dusted it all down. Sorry about them. But you know, it's a catchy tune. I myself got involved by singing it and enjoyed singing it just because it was like, you know what, I feel good. This is nice.
Exactly.
And I think there's a load of pseudo nonsense talked about, and you know, people like, look, whatever. Would Luka Modric have not played well if he hadn't have heard that we were all singing "It's Coming Home"? It's absolute fucking nonsense.
The thing
Sorry
is,
my language.
The Croatia team preferred "World in Motion," and that's where the real
that was their real beef.
First single I ever bought. That
is it.
It was
good taste.
Yes, yes, thank you very much. I was seven. Went down our price with me 80p.
Buying new order at
got
seven.
It on a 12,
that is,
got it on a 12-inch.
I don't know how I feel about that, but so I'm going to ask.
Is it a 12-inch or a 7-inch? I never know. I never know. I've been saying something 12 for ages.
So Josh is the Nigerian in the room. You two are both Brits. This is a really kind of wanky question I didn't want to ask, but I'm going to ask it. Did this football team make you feel more English again, and did it make you feel connected to your England football team? did you feel watching this team, yeah, I like the look of this team, I like what they're about, they're not up themselves, they're giving their all, they're doing their best, and they're representing me?
Does someone want to speak?
I was looking at Greg and looking at Greg.
Was it on me?
Sorry, I thought it was on you too.
Sorry, I thought it was on Josh.
No, I was saying as the non, as the Nigerian.
Sorry,
here,
sorry.
To the two Brits.
I mean, I've kind of hated being the national team for like years because, I just think we've a bunch of wasters.
I miss that.
Yeah, it's just.
And is that not only because they've been crap, but they've also not represented...
Exactly that. Like, we've built this massive new stadium in Wembley, so it's London-centric again. I prefer the England national team had to move around the country when there's no national stadium, because it felt like the team were coming to us. I mean, okay, I live in London now and I love it and all the rest of it, but it was great when England, like, rocked up in the North East, or rocked up in Manchester or in Leeds or something. I felt like an actual England national team there, not the London national team. It sounds daft. And seeing guys like Harry Maguire and John Stones and Kyle Walker and all the rest of it, and Pickford and goal... It just felt like an actual team that kind of had a bit of everything in it. And again, it was the lack of egos, it was the smiles on their faces, everyone was getting on, there's a lot of fun in that team. I can't remember, it made me, going back earlier, I said I loved 1998 because it made me kind of, because I was a kid, made me feel like I was a kid in 1998 again. And what you were saying, Tom, about the whole kind of like going back to the 90s thing, even kids that weren't in the 90s, the 90s is cool now. You know, people who never saw Italian 90.
I mean, it happened to the 80s 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll happen to the 2000s.
100%.
In 10 years' time, 100%. And I won't know anything.
I mean, you've got kids that never saw Italian 90 that now think that they were there watching it when it was gone live. You know, it's that whole kind of thing. Like, and I think tapping into that feel-good, like, kind of Summer of Love 90s thing almost, they kind of came into. That's what the whole It's Coming Home thing was about. And I think people latched onto that, at least... people I was around kind of got involved with that, and it made them feel good, as you said, Tom. I think it was just the feel good factor.
Fair enough. Tom, do you feel like this is a team that you want to watch again? Is that maybe
Not
Southgate's
really.
Biggest success?
I mean, I'm glad it's all over. I mean, I can go back to being annoyed at Bournemouth now. to be honest, there is a. I mean, I'm not that nationalistic, so
you didn't.
I enjoyed it because I enjoyed watching the England team with me pals, enjoying a nice hot summer beer in the garden, watching it on a screen, you know, all that stuff. And they are likeable boys. I echo everything Greg said there. Boys, God, I'm old. They are a likeable bunch, and there is something in that. But I'm not that nationalistic. I enjoyed coming together and having fun with everyone. My mum was even interested, you know. And but I'm. If you offered me, if Bournemouth could win the League Cup or England could win the World Cup, I'd have Bournemouth winning the League Cup.
Yikes. And is that, Josh, part of Southgate's again genius? And that A, he put the team that he thought the country would get behind, young, diverse, humble. But also lowering expectations very early.
I think definitely the lowering of the expectations was what helped the England team. It also helped everyone else because, like, just going into it, just a bit of fun, right? And I think the weather helped.
Yep,
I think the weather was, like, something like, you know, a blessing from above or something. Payback
for Brexit.
Yeah. But, yeah,
the
so
B-word.
Definitely. Because I don't know. I think maybe it's just a PR thing because I don't really think that, the golden generation wasn't that relatable. When I think about it, I don't really think that I rate to this kind of England team more than that one. But
I'm not a huge fan of Rio Ferdinand, for example.
For personal reasons? Or
I just don't think he's a particularly likable guy. I think that I don't relate to these lads. Let's be honest. I'm like they're just like me. These
okay,
boys.
Well, are they,
but they're
what,
nice.
Are they more
they're nice.
Are they more relatable?
They're nice in a way that and they are more humble in a way that I don't think that crop of players were. As an example.
Fair enough. Stick with you, Josh. Final question on England. Who is done? Who's featured in their last England squad? I've got a list of like Welbeck, Young, Cahill, Rose, Vardy.
All of those names. Who else is in there? That's it, probably.
I don't think Danny Rose will be. I think Danny Rose will continue.
Yeah, I'm thinking World Cup squads because it's the World Cup, but he's going to be there for the Euros, isn't he?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. Sessegnon coming through.
Yeah.
Sessegnon's a left winger, really, though.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but I think if Luke Shaw sorts himself out, like, there are better left backs there than Danny Rose.
Can I just say, Luke Shaw, for those training pitches, like, he's looking like a machine.
Oh, let's not start that.
You know, if he stays fit, woo.
Well, the ones that I
he'll
saw,
be able to deck Mourinho.
No, that was a weird camera angle, apparently.
That was the 2 weeks before.
That was that's the camera that's always on me.
You know, you're going up on the tube and you get those advertisements saying before and after. Yeah. That's basically Luke Shaw's summer.
I saw that one. Fair enough. Yeah.
This is every summer, by the way.
It's true. Like,
before the start, Luke Shaw back in shape. Yeah, I'm not having it.
Who's his PR?
Are we expecting
Southgate?
Are we expecting Southgate to have an influx of new players in this new squad?
Yeah,
I've got players like Mount, Baker, Holding, Ox will be back in, Lascelles,
Holding.
Foden. Yep.
You think Holding, Rob Holding, you think he's going to get in the England side?
I think if he leaves,
he's shit, mate.
I think if he's no,
absolutely
I disagree
pony.
With that. Rob Holding has the
You're an
the
Arsenal
basics.
Fan. You watch him every week. How do you not know that he's shit?
No. That's why I know he's not shit. I think Rob Holding has the fundamentals to be a good defender.
Wow,
I just
hopeless,
think like the others,
mate.
He needs to leave and play.
He's hopeless.
Okay.
No? Rob Holding is shit. That the consensus is shit.
I haven't seen this.
I wouldn't go that far, but he's got a long way to go.
Oh no, I don't dispute that. That's why my point is
there's way better centre backs of his age than him. He's not quick enough.
Well, Maguire's not exactly quick.
What? Once he gets going,
Maguire's
he's like
not quick.
He's quick like a freight train. You know, once he gets going, it's like
Rob Holding has done nothing since joining Arsenal to put his faith in him.
I'm putting a group of players who I think, if they get regular football, it's a 2-year campaign. Remember, it's 2 years to the Euros. So I think in the next two years,
you've got to look a bit lower. I think you've got to look at like the Jaden Sanchez.
They're givers because they're playing. But I'm looking at players that are around.
I think forget about those guys. I think there's gonna the
ones that are out.
England under 20 squad plus the squad below that, the under 17s.
They're the ones that you
the players
might bring
from
through.
That is what you sort of go. We start looking at.
Yeah. All right. And who are the guys playing centre back in like Championship and League One? Because this is where Harry Maguire was three, four years ago. So we've got to look at that as well.
True. Let's move on now, gentlemen. We're going to talk a bit more in depth about Brazil and Nigeria in particular and their campaigns next week on the pod. But I want to talk a little bit about Spain. And just very briefly, and their campaign. How much do you think, Josh, of the exit that they kind of had against Russia is attributed to the Lopetegui sacking the day before the tournament? Or were they just not good enough? And that
I
was
just think, I just get the feeling that I don't think it would have been that much, had that much of an impact, just because of Hierro should have been aware of what was going on.
Mm.
I never really thought Spain were going to have a good World Cup, regardless. Mm. I don't really rate Lopetegui as a manager anyway.
Okay.
So, interesting what's going to happen at Real Madrid next season.
But I
don't think it would have had as big of an impact as people may think.
Okay. Greg, do you think it was, you know, they were probably at best a quarter final team?
To some extent, and this is a big call, I think it was theirs to lose and they lost it.
Mm.
I think they had the players, I think they had the preparation, I think they had the system, they had everything, they had the manager. What Southgate was saying about the managers can't change that much. I mean, I like Southgate, that's a sign of the limitation of him as a manager. Lopetegui can do all the stuff Southgate was very good at, setting the system, creating this team ethos. But his in-game substitutions and tweaks were fundamental, the same way that Guardiola's are to Manchester City. And his teams. I'm not saying he's that level, but he has that kind of input on games.
They finally disappeared up their own arse, didn't they?
They did, but I think it's because Herrera didn't know how to balance it. He just basically went, oh, he's a big name, he can do that. Diego Costa going, what are you doing? He can't take a penalty. And Herrera didn't know that enough about the players and didn't know about the squad to actually make it happen.
For those nuances. They'll probably come again at some point, I'm sure. Let's move on to Ronaldo now, to finish on Ronaldo, because I think that he's kind of under the radar because everyone knew about it, but the transfer that big normally is the big sports story, and it clearly wasn't.
He'll be devastated about that.
We spell him Myth with a 7 now. What's that about?
Who? Just
Ronaldo. He's unveiling. He spelled Myth with a 7.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
No.
Josh, do you think Allegri and Zidane made their respective decisions at their clubs because they knew Ronaldo was on the move?
Yeah, I get the feeling this. That's a tricky one. I get the feeling
I'll give you
Zidane.
Some time.
I think Zidane would have quit anyway.
Okay.
I think like winning 3 Champions League in a row, you ain't gonna top that. You need to get out. I don't know.
It's Madrid.
Yeah, it's only going down from there.
Yeah.
I think
But I do get the feeling that this transfer has been in the making for a little while. Just because, like, Juventus signed Cancelo, who was also, like, Jorge Mendes' client. It was just a weird signing. Don't know why that happened. And, I think, like, this transfer just happened way too quickly. We got the news came out of within a week and a half, he signed. And I just think, like, that
from
bigger
January,
transfer,
that was being worked
on. You've
got
to think that there's a lot more work that had to have gone into that.
Interesting. First player to win the league. Well, he wants to be the first player to win the league in Italy, Spain and England. The deal is worth €250 million. He'll get €30 million a year.
And after tax.
And after tax, yep, that's important to mention.
Wow.
But yeah, Greg, at 33, $100 million, I still think it's a really good deal. For Juventus, I think that's a good price, and that sounds a bit crazy. 100 mil.
I don't think anyone knows what a good price is out.
I think that is a good price. I think 100 mil for a 33-year-old Ronaldo. I think that's a lot of people think, oh, that's a lot of money. That's too much for a 33-year-old. Do you think they've overpaid for Ronaldo?
I can't agree with Tom. I don't know. I don't think there's any reference
so warped,
points to,
isn't it? The transfer market.
There's no logic to it, so I don't know. I think there's arguments you can make both sides that mean it's a really good deal and it's the worst deal ever. Probably not the worst deal ever because it is Ronaldo and all the rest of it. But, you know, he's just going to be a penalty box player. He's going to score loads of goals. He's going to boost their marketing efforts. Mm. They're going to get little bits on the side for all the image rights and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's a good deal. Don't know if it's a bargain or the rest of it. In the weird, overheated world of the transfer window, I've seen worse. Mm. You know, yeah. And he's going to win stuff because Juventus win stuff, so it's going to work out for everyone.
As does he.
Maybe it's not the transfer fee. That's the weird bit. The way I find it weird is that he's on a 4-year contract for $30 million after tax. I mean, in 2 years' time, that's going to look a bit weird.
But yeah, next summer he's going to say
the manager.
But then next summer he's going to say, I'm going to go to Man United, and then Juventus is going to have to give him a 5-year deal. And then the summer after that, it'll be a 6-year deal.
I'm an unashamed Cristiano Ronaldo fanboy. I think he's the greatest player of all time. And I think that he can play until he's 40. If you look at him, what a specimen he is.
That's why I think it's a good deal.
Fantastic. Mm. You never know. I mean, who knows? Because they're human beings, and human beings are machines, and they can break down. But he could very well stay fit until he's 40 and play in that role that he does. Why not?
Tom, do you think this deal was more about Juventus wanting to sign Ronaldo because they see him as the final peg to win the Champions League they want, or is this about them maybe wanting to be in the same kind of bracket as the Bayerns, the Reals, the Cities, and that in their league they can't really financially compete with what's happening in the Premier League and La Liga, and they see bringing Ronaldo in as more than just he'll win us a few more trophies?
A bit of both again. Gabriel Marcotti wrote a piece today saying that it's not about football, it's about business, but they are intrinsically linked. Mm. And if Ronaldo's rubbish on the pitch, then he's of no interest off it. Really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's sort of simplifying it.
But is it, if he's rubbish on the pitch, he'll still sell shirts.
You look at the things he did last season with the overhead kick against Juventus that Juventus fans applauded, winning that.
Do you think about that, by the way?
Champions League. You know, these are the reasons why Cristiano Ronaldo is held up there as this superstar. When he stops doing those things, the interest in him will naturally, of course, wane.
First half of last season, even more so than ever, the obituaries are being written. He can't do it anymore. Even his penalty box game has gone. He's taken so many shots. He hasn't scored the next amount of games. It can turn very quickly. It really can. But second half of the season, there's a redemption story and the brand's stronger than ever. I think he'll be fine.
You'll be all right. Just final point. I was thinking about this with him going to Juventus, and I was wondering to myself, do Juventus have a claim to say that they have signed the greatest players in history of football? And I'll read off some names to you. Del Piero, Thuram, Buffon, Baggio, Platini, Nedved, Zoff, Zidane, Brady, Ibrahimovic, Pirlo, Cannavaro, Laudrup, Paolo Rossi, Davids, Tardelli, Deschamps, Henri, Conte, Alves, Trezeguet, Benucci, Ferraro, Pogba, Viali, just to name
John Charles.
Some. And of course there. Can you think of another super club that can say we have signed as many top and good players as Juventus?
Real Madrid. Barcelona.
I'm not so sure. Could you think? Have they got the catalogue of players?
Milan.
Not sure.
You don't think Real Madrid?
I don't think Madrid. I think some of those players there. many of whom admittedly have played for
Real Madrid started doing that before anyone else, though, and they are players that were greats that even our grandparents were like, oh, bloody hell. I don't know.
You are also expecting us to be a bit like Rain Man.
Yeah.
Every single player that has been signed by every single big club across Europe.
I thought it was an exciting sign. I
can barely remember what I had for lunch.
But like Real Madrid had that team with Di Stefano and all the rest of them, and Puskás, and they were doing it before anyone else. I think Real Madrid have the title for that, 100%. Well, Juventus are up there, but going back to what I was saying earlier about the branding stuff, Juventus did that big rebrand of their kit, their logo, and everything recently. I think
they went on Twitter, Instagram. I think
they're trying to move their name to being Juve rather than Juventus. It's like a whole push to kind of make it more kind of, again, maybe millennial friendly. And I think Ronaldo is kind of another step towards
This is probably for another podcast, but we're heading towards a Euro Super League without doubt. Absolutely.
This is the sort of
signing you might make were you in a Euro Super League.
100%. This sounds like a petty point, but you notice how all the big clubs that would get into European Super League are actually condensing all their team names down to one or two syllables. They're all doing it. Or into acronyms. You've got PSG, you've got Arsenal, Chelsea, obviously, but then you've got City, you can just call them City, United, Barca are being called Barca more and more now. Real. I know it sounds like a small thing, but I just think that's a pattern there. Bayern as well. You can just stick them all in a league. You're taking off their geographic location, so it doesn't matter where they're from anymore, and they're just brands.
I totally agree with you. It's definitely going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Really. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Greg, where can people find your work?
Football.london. No.com. No.uk. Just .london. Football.london.
What do you cover?
Football in London. Football and dots. So polka dots to do all of it in London. We're on Twitter as well. Football_London. No dots on that one. And you can find us on Facebook as well. So
looking
do that.
Looking forward to the new season?
Oh, yeah.
Are you football fatigued?
No, never.
Never.
The Scottish League Cup started on Thursday.
Scotland is a subsidiary of London.
Kilmarnock went out on penalties. Did you not hear?
And Tom, where can people find your Here or Next show?
It's on every Friday and Saturday night on TalkSport, buried away at, late.
You can get it on the player though.
You can get it on the player. Yeah. It's overnight, but it is, I should point out, the breakfast show in China.
I like that. Yeah. Somebody's waking up.
Paulinho listens to it regularly.
I do get lots of people from China actually, and Singapore and various things. It was really interesting actually, if I can just say in terms of the show. When I did the show before the semi-final, the England semi-final, and I was just saying, where are you going to watch the game, who are you going to watch it with, and how do you think the score is going to go? And we were getting so many calls and texts and tweets from people abroad, largely America and the Far East, because it's their daytime, and they were obviously expats, and they were buzzing for the England game in the semi-final, and they wanted their fix of England and news coming out of the England camp, and the only place they could get it at that time
was
TalkSport, and it was great. That show was one of the best shows I've done since I've been on air. It was so nice, and it's the way that football can unify people and families, and it just gave me a little tingly sensation, and it reminded me of your '96 of World Cup '90. Remember all those things, and just the memories it creates with the people that it creates it with, and everyone in the country was the same, and that was why it was such it's been such a nice summer, I think.
Okay, what's the one big takeaway from the World Cup, guys? Just in a sentence, what's the one thing you'll take away from this World Cup? Start with you, Josh.
Neymar being rubbish.
So that's your worst moment. That's your takeaway. Wow,
he left an impression.
Don't like Neymar. Fair enough. Greg.
I don't want to go too deep, but it's basically what we were talking about earlier, as in like this kind of, you can all come together without it being a weird kind of BNP rally, which is great. So yeah,
fair point. And Tom?
The football's not as good as the top level European stuff, but it sort of doesn't matter because it brings people into football that maybe aren't even interested in football, brings them in, unifies them, and everyone can have a good time, and apart from the pussy riot thing, which I enjoyed, it all went swimmingly for everybody, didn't it? Apart from Germany
and a few other teams
and Brazil and Argentina.
And on that note, we'll end it there. Josh, Tom, Greg, thank you very much for coming on the FFP. Do not forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We are also on Audioboom. We're on Spotify. Send us any messages. We're on Twitter, Facebook, all the socials. Until next week, guys. Peace.